Gathered in Maria, orang itu ia tuh ihonai. Opa betul nukue takatonai. Ote tayoe afinai ia tato tihei Maori ora. This is the Green Desk on 95 BFM.
It is indeed, and this week on the Green Desk, Mitch moves away from his typical climate crises talk at the moment and discusses a new report with the author of said report, Dr. Erica Todd, who has recently released a study which allows us to understand how certain species of fish are able to undergo sex changes at a genetic level. Mitch and Dr. Todd discuss the physical and genetic changes of the fish that undergo said changes, raising the question about its potential application in other areas. Mitchell begins by asking Dr. Todd about the process and just how many species of fish are able to do this thing.
Actually, we're talking about 500 or so species of fish are able to change sex during their life cycle. And it's about 2% of all fish species because it's such an incredibly diverse group. But we're talking about a big diverse group of fish here that are able to change their sex. And we think it's actually evolved multiple times.
Why are fish actually doing this?
That's a really good question. It has a lot to do with the relationship between reproductive capacity and body size, actually. So the fish that we study change sex from female to male, and they're highly social. So they breed in groups of females, defended by this large, brightly coloured, aggressive, dominant male. And when he is lost, usually the largest female will change sex to replace him. And actually they balance this by breeding as a female while small, and then changing sex to be a male while large. They're sort of getting the benefit of both worlds here. So this particular species, only these large males are effective at defending a territory. So that's why it's better to be a large male later in life.
Right, and so this only goes one way. The males don't become fertile or anything like that. Is it irreversible or reversible?
In the wrasses that we study, they change sex in one direction from female to male and don't tend to go backwards, or we don't believe that they do. So there are other species that change sex from male to female, and in those cases the males don't have this social dominance, they're not dominant, and therefore it's of benefit to be a large female because you simply produce more eggs. And then there's other species again that can change sex in either direction, such as coral gobies, where it's so rare that they meet another individual. So they're having this capacity to change into either sex at any time means that two fish can always form a male-female breeding pair.
So that obviously, it all depends on the context of the fish then. So when it comes
definitely.
Like the transition itself, do they all vary in time, or is it fast, or is it take like years, or what are we talking?
We're talking very big differences across species. For example, the bluehead wrasse that we have been studying for the last few years are pretty special because of the speed. So these guys can change sex from female to male within 8 to 10 days. So from removing a dominant male, these females start to first display differences in behavior. They become socially dominant and aggressive. And then they also start courting the other females in the group. And then within 8 to 10 days, their ovaries start to degenerate and are completely replaced by testes, and they're ready to breed by around day 8 or 10. But in other species, such as the New Zealand spotty, actually, a lot of people might be familiar with if they've ever thrown a line off the wharf, paketi, it's also called. These guys take a lot longer to transition, so more around sort of 8 to 10 weeks. But it's a lot colder down here, so that probably explains a reason why.
Right, and so how did you guys actually figure out this process? Like, what actually changes in their genetic makeup?
So what we did is we studied this genetic process from two angles. We used these powerful technologies where we can examine all the genes that are active in a sample at a given time. So we collected gonads from these fish at the female stage, and then increasing time points across sex change to male. And we can put together a time series of how genes are changing across that transition. So we can see which genes are turned off and on in the gonad during sex change, and we found that there was a complete genetic rewiring of the gonad. We saw that genes needed to maintain the ovary first turned off, and then a new genetic pathway is turned on involving genes that are really important for promoting testis formation and other male functions. The other thing that we did was to look at chemical marks on DNA. This is a form of epigenetic regulation that determine whether or not genes are available to be turned on. So it was really cool to be able to combine those two aspects and look at not only gene activity, but what controls gene activity as well. And we saw that in these chemical marks, they were removed and redistributed during sex change. So it was a really dynamic process.
I know this is for fish, but the way that you're talking about it just then and the sort of transition in the markers, it makes me wonder, can this be applied to other species outside of fish?
Yeah, actually, a lot of the genes that are important for sexual development in fish are also important in other animals. So by understanding how these complex networks of genes interact to determine and maintain sex, we can sort of not only apply this to our understanding of sexual development in other vertebrate animals generally, but also understand a little bit more about how these networks of genes evolved in the first place.
Right. And so when it comes to something like, declining fish stocks, technically we could sort of manipulate those so that we could increase breeding and things like that to bring them back from the brink possibly.
Yeah, that could be a potential further application from this sort of downstream in the future. But at the moment, we didn't quite take that approach in the research. We were just really wanting to understand how sex change works at a fundamental genetic level. But the more we understand about how the environment influences sex and sex ratios, that's definitely relevant to species that are of conservation concern, but also to the aquaculture industry, because a lot of fishes of commercial value, blue cod, for example, is another species that changes sex. So if we're to farm such fish, we really want to be able to control sex ratios. And so understanding how sex change works is really important.
I mean, I know you guys have only been doing this for a couple of years. Did you guys notice over that time the way that maybe climate change has affected these fish?
That wasn't a part of the study, so we didn't look at that.
Yep.
But I know that there's other research going on, for example, in Australia, have actually noticed that there's other fish species on the Great Barrier Reef where normally sex is determined genetically, and so they have a 50-50 male-female sex ratio. Actually, they're finding that increasing global sea temperatures are sort of pushing sex ratios towards maleness, which is quite concerning, but it also shows, again, how plastic sexual development is in fish generally. But it is a concerning example when we're thinking about the impacts of climate change on fish.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that, Erica. Did you want to add anything else?
Just that this has been a really big collaborative effort, actually. This project has involved researchers across three countries. So there's myself and a group of other people in the Gemmell Lab and other researchers at the University of Otago. We were working with colleagues in North Carolina State University in the US and also La Trobe University in Australia. So it's a big collaborative effort, actually.
That was The Green Desk on 95 BFM. Tihei Modi Order.